Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to episode 22 of the AP Now podcast. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now. In this episode, we welcome Jill Dimtrow, tax information reporting expert, who's going to talk to us today about B-notices. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. Welcome, Jill. I understand, just so the audience who can see you and is not just listening, that you're wearing the same outfit today that you have on in your professional picture.
I am. So if you have a picture of me in your head while I'm talking, it is exactly what it looks like on the screen.
For those who aren't just listening.
You're probably not wearing a scarf, right?
Yeah. Okay. So on to more serious matters. You know, I've known you for a long time, perhaps, and I always call you my fun tax reporting friend because you always make this topic interesting. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Morse Adams.
Sure. So I started in information reporting kind of towards the beginning of my career. And I like to say right around the turn of the century, around 2000. Okay. It evolved a lot since then. So, you know, really right when the 1441 regs came out. So 1042S reporting was, you know, a big new thing. And then that, you know, obviously just naturally evolves with 1099 information reporting. So I've been practicing this a really long time. And then about a year ago, I, along with a colleague of mine, Aaron Fenimore, joined Moss Adams, which is a West Coast-based accounting firm, to start an information reporting and withholding practice here. So we have a brand new practice. The firm is kind of more geared towards mid-market clients. So it's exciting. Usually in my past, I have a lot of history working with, you know, big multinational corporations or large financial institutions that had, you know, a whole information reporting professionals and things like that in-house and people who are solely responsible for these things. So now it's just a whole new world of dealing with, you know, different group of people and people who have, you know, little bits and pieces of this rather than it being, you know, a massive thing. But it's been fun and exciting, and there's lots of new things to learn always. So that's great.
So I could say, Jill, welcome to my world. Okay.
Hey.
Yeah. So we decided we were going to talk about B notices today. So maybe we could start off, you could explain to the audience, so we're all on the same page, what a B notice is.
Sure. So it is, we are approaching B notice season. So September, October is when these things come out, and you would see them as something called a 2100 or notice 2100, 2100A, depending on the volume. It comes from the IRS, and it's in response to your 1099 filing, although it does apply to a number of different types of 1099s and 1098s and associated information return reports. In the US, we have this self-reporting tax system. So every year we put on a form what we earned and what we paid in tax, and then we tell the IRS what we owe them, or we tell the IRS they owe us some money. And the self-reporting mechanism only really works because of information reporting that the IRS gets. So if they didn't get any information from our employers or our payers of any types of income, we would all say, like, I made $8 this year. So I don't owe you any tax. But because, well, I'm sure there are some honest people out there that would, you know, say that they made more. So information reporting is really something that the IRS relies on. They're going to require more of it in the future, and they're scrutinizing it really carefully. And they've gotten quite good at evaluating the forms 1099 they get in, taking the name 10 combination on that form and matching it up with a return that's been filed or that hasn't been filed, and contacting the person who has, you know, failed to report this information on their tax return. So really what happens is this B notice is a process where they go through all those name 10 combinations, all the forms 1099 that you've submitted. They look at the name 10 combinations and make sure it matches in their database so they can track whether the income reported on that form is being reported on their tax return. So it's crucial that they're getting this information. It's right, they can match it up. And where that name 10 combination doesn't match something in their database, that's when they send you a notice and say, hey, we got to resolve this right away because we need this information in order to make sure we're collecting the tax that we're owed. And so you've got to get on this and fix it right away. And so the B notice is the 2100-2100A where they're just telling you, hey, these are all wrong. And that's going to trigger a bunch of requirements on the filer's part to go and get that fixed. And there's a very specific prescription about what the steps are that the filer needs to take within like 15 days of getting this notice. So it's something that you need to be prepared to receive. You need to know to whom it is going to be mailed. And you need to know exactly what you're going to do. You have to be set up for exactly what you're going to do as soon as you receive it so you can hit the ground running.
So, dumb question on my part, one of many. Why do they call it a B notice?
Because it aligns to the regulations of where you would be required to backup withhold. So in the backup withholding regulations, like item B is where you have been informed by the IRS that the name 10 combination that you have submitted does not match, and now you must apply backup withholding.
Okay.
C is a C note. There's a C notice, and that's something that's item C. But yeah, that is why it's called a B notice.
Okay. All righty. So there's the B notices, and then there are penalty notices. What's the difference?
Yes. So a B notice is going to come. So say you do your 1099 filing in January, February, March of the year. The IRS is working on processing all those notices, all those filings that you've done. So in September, October of that year, you're going to get a B notice that says, hey, we tried to match these and it didn't work out. Penalty notices come like 9 months later, and they're going to come in the form of a 972 CG. And what they're going to do is take the number of B notices that they've issued to you, and they're going to say, we identified 100 forms 1099 MISC and 20 forms 1099 B. And then they're going to say, you know, you owe us $270, which is the current penalty rate for an incorrect name 10 combination for each item that you received on that 2100 or 2100A. So all of a sudden, the action that you did or did not take 9 months earlier becomes really critical in requesting abatement. So the 972 CG is generally like you shouldn't pay that. You do 1099 reporting. No matter how careful you are, there will likely be some B notices you get because of events beyond your control. You have been provided the wrong name 10 combination, or somebody's changed their name and didn't notify you. There was a merger and there was a 10 change and somebody didn't notify you. If you're in the business of 1099 reporting, these are going to happen. But if you do the procedures prescribed in publication 1281, as you are required to do, then you have an excuse for not paying the 972 CG penalty notice, the amount on that notice, and you should request abatement for that because it is, you know, oftentimes the IRS is very cognizant with the fact that these should be submitted for abatement request.
Okay, so we were talking when we first started, and you told me that there's some interesting developments, some interesting things you've seen on B notices.
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of in the last couple of years, I've noticed. So publication 1281 that I mentioned before, which is going to give you it kind of explains the steps of the B notices and what happens when you file with incorrect name 10 combinations and you know, all the steps that you're supposed to take and, you know, some different information about decoding the file that they send you. So I have noticed in the last couple of years, the form 1042S has shown up as one of the document types that you might identify, that might be identified on a B notice. So in the past, you know, one of the remedies that we'll talk about a bit later for how to avoid getting B notices is doing TIN matching. And so we never, oftentimes, you may have a U.S. taxpayer ID number on a form W-8 that you then report on your 1042-S. And we've always just said, you know, no sense in B noticing your forms, TIN matching your 1042-S forms, because there's no benefit or gain there. You know, it's not like they run them through the B notice process. But if they're not doing it today, I haven't seen it yet. But it looks like they're prepared to do that in the future. So it might be conventional wisdom to go ahead and start TIN matching the name TIN combinations you're issuing on forms 1042S if it's a U.S. TIN.
Even if, isn't 1042s not one of the forms?
Oh, that you're a, well, there we go. Yep. There. So that this brings up another interesting note is that you are not allowed technically to use the TIN matching system for all of the forms that are identified under B notices. So 1042S would be on that list along with a lot of other forms. So so I guess we should jump into TIN matching now because we're kind of there.
Before we get there, okay, we need to have a message from our sponsor. Okay, hold that thought. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose and it takes time to track down approvers while also having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies all that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI called Billy the Bot immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Now here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communication between approvers, accounts payable, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/APnow. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/APnow. All righty, Jill. I guess we wanted to talk about TIN matching a little bit, and then maybe we can talk about some common issues.
Sure. Okay. So so TIN matching is this program offered by the IRS. It's free of charge. You would have to go in and set up an e-services user account for an individual, and then that individual could set the organization up as a TIN authorized TIN match user for named TIN combinations that they're obligated to report on certain forms. So again, as Mary brought up wisely, you're only authorized to use the system for certain information return reports, and not all of the ones on the B notice list. So there are some things that you're not quite allowed to use this for yet, so be cognizant of that. But essentially what it does is allows you to go ahead and run the name TIN combinations that you're required to report through this IRS tool prior to submitting your 1099 file. So we always say, okay, if you're getting payees in and you're collecting forms W-9 upon the inception of this relationship, you should TIN match when you collect their form W-9. And then before you do your filing, when you have your file together, you can run those through another time and you can figure out then if there's anything you need to clear up. So the thing is that once you get the B notice, you have some requirements that have to take place within 15 days. So you have to look at all the name TIN combinations that are on that notice. You have to search your systems to see where that invalid name TIN combination is stored. You have to send a notice to the payee that says, hey, we have an invalid name TIN combination as per the IRS. So we need you to give us a valid form W-9 if it's a first B notice and help us out to correct this. And if they do not give you a new certified name TIN combination, or even for a first B notice, the name TIN combination that the IRS just told you is incorrect is actually acceptable as well. But if you don't get a response back, a satisfactory response back from them, you have to back up withhold on reportable payments made to those name TIN combinations after 30 business days from when you receive that B notice. So we see people like just neglecting these. Sometimes they go to a place that is not, you know, a place that this item will be actioned. So it's really important to make sure you know who that person who you've put as the contact when you did your e-filing. That should be where this notice goes. Sometimes that gets changed and updated, so just be cognizant of that. And then, you know, if people get this list and it's longer than they anticipated, maybe they don't have the staffing or the letter prepared. And there's kind of template letters that the IRS has provided in 1281. But again, like maybe you have an internal requirement that everything has to go through marketing and the marketing person's out. They're not going to be able to approve this communication. So just making sure you're prepared for this. Sometimes it's hard to be prepared for the volume, but if you are using kind of common procedures from year to year, you should kind of anticipate a similar volume from year to year. If you're doing, you know, maybe you acquired a business and you're doing a bunch of new reporting, that might be something you want to say, okay, we don't know what we're going to get. We need to have some people kind of on the ready in order to action this this 2100 if we get it and it's big. So not being prepared for it, losing it somewhere within your organization, just not actioning it. Once you get that 972 CG 9 months later, you know, you're going to want to have a strong argument about why you don't owe $270 right. per item, which can add up really quickly. So what you do is immediately upon receipt of this notice is quite critical for how much money you're going to owe the IRS down the line.
Isn't it true, Jill, also that sometimes people say, well, it's only $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is, and they go ahead and pay it, and then they set a precedent?
Yeah, so that's another big issue. I mean, sometimes it's even like much smaller than that. And you're like, well, so-and-so's on vacation and I can't reach this person. And so it's $2,000. I'm just going to pay it because it would essentially cost me more to address it than it would to just get rid of it. But the problem then is you're setting up a precedent that you are offensive. You are offending. You are breaking the rules, you're a rule breaker, you disregard these procedures that you have to do. And one day down the road, you might be in a position where you receive a very large penalty and you will want to have the argument on your side that you are a compliant filer and you don't pay penalties because you can get them abated because you have reasonable cause each year. So, you know, I always advise when you get these, if there's any way that you can make an argument to not pay them, go ahead and make that argument because it can pay off in spades down the line when you have like a $200,000
yeah.
penalty.
Yeah. All right. So you said you had some stories you were going to share.
I mean, there's so many stories about this. So I'd say probably the most interesting one, and this is not a good story for me, but it's interesting. So we'll talk about it. But yeah, we had one client who was just not using TIN matching. The other thing about TIN matching is there is some personal liability involved. And so some institutions have said, we don't want, you know, our employees taking on this liability, and then they might come to us and something bad could happen. And by the way, if that does happen, go to a third party TIN matching provider. It's better than nothing. There's plenty of companies out there that will provide the service to you. But I had one client who year after year would get, I mean, hundreds of B notices. It might have been a 4-digit number. And so every year they would send this. There is a specific prescription of how you should write these abatement letters, and you know, you did all the things you're supposed to do, and you sent out the requests, and here's an example of the requests we sent, and then if we didn't get it back, we started applying backup withholding, and for these people who, you know, have been be noticed for years and years, we send them an annual solicitation, even though we backup withhold, here are the things we do, and it's beyond our control, blah blah blah. But instead, this client was sending a notice back to the IRS that said, you know, okay, we have a name TIN mismatch for John Smith at TIN number 123456789. Well, IRS, I happen to have a W-9 from John Smith that has that exact TIN number on it, so you are wrong and we are right.
Oh, God.
Thousands of forms every year. And somehow, I mean, they really did send like the Encyclopedia Britannica to the IRS in response to this notice.
Oh, no.
And every year it would get abated. And we're like, this is going to go really badly one year because somebody's going to look at that and be like, this, none of this is valid, and right. you owe us all this money. And then we're going to have to go to appeals and everything else because you're not soliciting and you're not backup withholding. So the one year that we were like, okay, we got to get this stuff in order. Here's the way your abatement request should look. And here's the documentation you need. And this is the proper way to appeal a 972 CG. Well, that year they got denied. Maybe there's the same person at the IRS that is looking at their forms that every year they're like, well, okay, they did their thing. And this looks totally different from what I'm used to seeing for them. So I'm really going to apply this.
I bet you that was a pleasant conversation.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, like, it's clear that you're not meeting the requirements. You're doing the total wrong thing. Yet when you did the right thing, now you got penalized. So we took care of it for them in appeals, but it was still like, oh man.
What did they say? No good deed goes unpunished.
Exactly. Yes.
That's I shouldn't be laughing. I don't mean to be laughing at you, but you gotta admit it is.
Sometimes
funny.
You have to laugh.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have
yep.
to laugh.
All right. So how about as we come down to the end of our time together today, we just give the audience a few best practices that they can use.
Sure. Okay. So TIN matching. It's best to get ahead of this before you receive the name TIN combination on a B notice. So the thing is, even if you submit a TIN matching file before your 1099 file goes in and you identify a bad TIN, you have a long time to get a better name TIN combination. You can go ahead and file that invalid name TIN combination knowing it will get a B notice, but at least now you have time to call the person and say, hey, we've identified this as a bad name TIN combination. How can we fix this? Can you give us a new form? Can you do you're not limited to that 30-day time period before you have to start applying backup withholding or you're liable for it. So TIN matching when you collect a form W-9, TIN matching when you have identified your reporting population, and then taking the time to remedy those. Because if you do get a B notice with a name TIN combination that you reported, but you have since corrected with a new form W-9, a new TIN that you've been provided, then you don't have to action that B notice as it comes in. So that's important. That's critical. You know, try to do it.
Okay.
The other thing is going ahead to collect forms W-9. So most forms 1099 do require a certified name TIN combination on a form W-9. The 1099 miscellaneous, though, does not require a certified name TIN combination. So you don't have to collect technically a form W-9 in order to report a name TIN combination on a 1099 MISC. However, there's so many reasons we would recommend doing this because you can find out about disregarded entities. You can find out about, you know, sole proprietorships where the entity name and the TIN you have isn't correct. You need the individual. You have the individual's SSN. You just don't have their name. So a lot of things come out in the W-9 process that then should turn into the TIN matching process that would really limit the number of B notices that you get on an annual basis. And you want to do that because they're an administrative burden, they're an exposure, and then you have to request abatement. And as I pointed out earlier, you don't know who's on the other end of that abatement request.
Right.
What they think is the thing you need to do. So it's better to avoid that entirely if you can.
Okay. Well, that was very interesting, Jill. I appreciate you taking the time to come and talk with us. I'd like to thank the audience for listening to the AP Now podcast, as well as our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. And I hope, Jill, that you'll come back sometime and chat with us some more.
Thanks, Mary. That sounds great.
Okay. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate the episode, review the episode, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn, Facebook, or your staff. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for our free twice-a-week e-zine. It also contains tips and news of upcoming AP events and article postings. Thanks for listening. I hope to see you again on another podcast soon. Mm-hmm.